This podcast is about spoilers and discussion. It's also about spooky stuff. You know, any film that we talk about here, we recommend you see in advance. You've been warned.
All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
The horror. There is no shortage of monsters to haunt our dreams.
The horror.
You got red on you.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
The horror.
Alive, it's alive.
Groovy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Oh the Horror. It's a podcast where we talk about horror films from an enthusiast and a newcomer's perspective, you might say.
I mean, you could say that. You're not really as much of a newcomer anymore.
I'm growing. I'm growing every day. And from this point on, we'll be in the same camp because we've both seen this movie already.
Yeah,
before.
We both have.
We've discussed this before. We absolutely love this and kind of it's a layup shot for talking about how great it is, but I feel like if we dive a little deeper, we can find some interesting things that aren't really touched on that often.
Yeah, that's true. Before we get started, I'm Rob Holmes.
I'm Steve Allman, and this week's episode, we're going to be looking at Attack the Block.
Yeah, the Joe Cornish film from 2011. This movie is a blast.
This movie came out kind of under the radar, you might say. Like
it's a British film. And over there it had more of a wider release than it did here. Mm-hmm. I mean, it had a release here, but I feel like it was cinemas and video on demand right around the same time.
Edgar Wright put his name on it as EP and producer and stuff. And this is a film that's very much in the same vein of an Edgar Wright style adventure.
Very much
I'd call this an unfair comparison, but you would see a lot of a like Shaun of the Dead with kids in the hood with aliens.
Goonies, Gremlins type meets like an Edgar Wright film.
Exactly.
It's like a Joe Dante movie almost meets an Edgar Wright film. I don't know, a little bit of that Spielberg-esque feel to it about having the kids, you know, like really following them around.
Very true.
But then it gets really dark because this movie kind of pulls like a Chuck Russell, like how he does in the 1988 Blob, where kids just get killed, man. They do not care.
It's very true. There's always a bit of levity that comes with every sort of serious moment in this movie. That kind of keeps it along, that kind of Goonies track
record.
It does.
It definitely makes it more of a modern day realistic version, because the Goonies, if you actually had that happen in modern cinema, not all of them would make it out.
No. And it's not as full of sentimental tat as you might say.
Right.
Not to knock the Goonies, but you know, it's a bit Hollywood-y.
Yeah.
You could
say. Of course.
This has a lot more edge to it. Now, to sort of recap the plot for those who haven't seen it,
if you're listening to this, you should have seen this film by now.
You absolutely should.
If you haven't, stop listening now, because we've probably already even said too much.
Yeah.
And just go watch it and just forget what you heard. Mm-hmm. So, all right, now we'll get into the movie a bit.
Sure. First of all, pre-Star Wars John Boyega.
Yeah, and pre-Dr. Jodie Whittaker.
I mean, we are still pre-Dr. Jodie Whittaker.
Well, that's true,
thankfully.
But like we're almost there.
Yeah, but we're looking forward to that turn for her.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
She's earning it, and I'd very much like to kind of give props to, first of all, like Jon Boyega, because this was kind of a big breakout role
for
him.
This was like his
first breakout
big film,
yeah.
So, no, he was great. He plays Moses in there, the leader of this kind of, I guess, street gang.
Yeah.
They go around mugging people around the block. And, well, people who aren't living in the block, they usually mug. But they end up mugging Jodie Whittaker's character, who's a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't realize, like, she lives in the block. So later on, when they finally end up meeting up with her later, because they kind of join forces, they do apologize for mugging her and stuff like that. But it starts with mugging right away, and then the second that happens, you have kind of like a shooting star go by, and then it's, you know, a little meteor comes to Earth, hits a car. It's this weird, pale-ass creature, alien creature, right?
Yes.
And it starts attacking, you know, the kids, and then they end up fighting the thing off, and they kill it within the first 5 minutes of the movie, opening credits.
Straight off the jump. And it's done with a again that type of lightheartedness and like comedy. It's comedy, really.
Well, the way the opening felt to me was very E.T. Like, oh, when yes, they go absolutely. Out
and
to
then
the,
it just shuts down
to the work
all the...
it goes out to the work shed or like the garage area type mm-hmm. thing, and you're thinking it's going to be this like nice, not nice type thing, but it definitely is like
this whimsical kind of like,
it's the antithesis of what E.T. is. Instead of it being like, oh, an alien, it's like, oh, fuck, an alien, let's kill it.
Right. And like, it always, the movie tried to like start you off with that kind of sentiment of like, oh, wow, what's this? No, fuck this, kill it.
But then what's great is that it shows what happens the second you kill an alien. Mm-hmm. More of them come after you.
Yeah.
So then you just see more of these things shooting out of the sky, crashing in, you know, all around London. They are like the opposite of what this creature is. So like the other creature that came down there, I guess, was like the female, right? So it's kind of like the albino. It's the female version of whatever this species is. Mm-hmm. Or male version, who knows. And then the other version is they're all black, but like pitch black, like so dark that it's just impossibly dark.
As one of our heroes says, blacker than my cousin.
Yeah, Franz, I think that's Franz Drama who's on a Legends of Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah.
He's really good in this. Mm-hmm. Until he loses his head.
All these kids are magnificent.
Like, yeah, they're, like, I mean, it's an amazing cast. Like, it's a fun cast. I like the... So Joe Cornish based this film. So basically, okay, what happens is these things end up appearing. They are vicious. They have these, like, glow-in-the-dark teeth, like bioluminescent teeth. And you can't see anything except these teeth and the fur.
This sort of
basically.
Like bear-like shape.
Yeah,
kind
this
of.
Crazy bear-like shape that will tear people into fucking pieces.
A brilliant design to be done on the cheap.
Well, and it's a CG design,
right.
But it works really well. Like, yeah, I don't hate it.
It's a very cool, like, elusive design for a creature, when you want to make a bunch of them.
Right, and they call it out, too, as, like, never seen anything like this before. Like, it's, you know, pitch black, like impossibly black when they move their hand through it. It's mm-hmm. just like, oh, that looks strange. But to them, so it does too.
Yeah.
So then it's more like forgivable for the fact that, yeah, it is CG, but
they're calling it out.
Yeah, and for
the
movie,
what it is.
And for the movie, it works. And there are amazing practical effects in this, especially the gore effects. Like some of the stuff with the claw marks to the face and, you know, just bite marks to like the leg and the neck,
and of course
Moses' like
showdown in the hallway with the sword and like in slow motion with the fireworks
and
everything.
Dude, that
fantastic.
Scene in itself is that's epic, man.
It's a fantastically done sequence,
and it's not over the top. So like Joe Cornish did, I guess he did a bunch of music videos first. I'm pretty
yes.
sure he's like a music video director. Mm-hmm. So that scene alone, just watching that, was very much like a music video.
Mm-hmm.
And then instead of overstaying its welcome, it ends up going in and, you know, finishing off the end of the film. Instead of making that like a Zack Snyder,
yeah.
Can we do it slow motion for 5 minutes straight?
Right.
Which gets super tedious when you're like, all right, seriously, just end the film. But yeah, man, I love this film. I had a lot of fun with it. Joe Cornish based it on an actual incident where he got mugged coming home in London and seeing that the kids were just as scared as he was when they were mugging him.
Right. It's a very empathetic
it really
eye
is, yeah.
that gives characters like this where you don't realize it until like halfway through the movie, but like Moses is 15.
And he basically lives alone. Like he is taking care of himself in this place. And it's really kind of like,
and he's got
shit.
Like a small family to keep after as
and
well because of all these other kids.
And he's the one they look up to, so he's mm-hmm. the one who's got to keep them. So he's got to be the tough one, right?
Yeah.
And this film's just there's so many cool moments like that, and so much of a backstory that you get without having to really delve too deep into it. And then the other cool part is that, you know, Joe Cornish talked to a lot of kids who lived in that area and like kind of were gang members, I guess.
Yeah.
And got like they, you know, certain lines of dialogue in there, that's how they would talk. And they asked him like, what type of weapons would you guys use? And they're like telling them exactly
around the
what
house.
They would use.
Yeah.
And it's cool shit. Like kids would totally be like, if I were in my teens and shit like that, and someone's like, what would you use? I'd use a fucking samurai sword, man. I would totally use the katana.
Yeah.
Like that sounds awesome. And like using giant fireworks on them, which ends up working surprisingly well. That was awesome. You know what I want to see? I want to see a sequel with Probs and Mayhem.
Oh boy, I don't know if the
dude.
No, it would be a prequel as to what all they did in the trash can.
Well, no, and we're talking like it's 6 years later, right?
Yeah.
So let's say we want the same actors, right? So we get them in their late teens, early 20s. This film gets made in a few years, and it's all like it happens again. And it's Probs and Mayhem. You have John Boyega and a couple other people maybe show up, but it's focused around the two of them becoming like, you know, legends around the block as well as Moses. And they're trying to become like alien hunters or some crap like that. I think it'd be hilarious or ridiculous, especially if it happens again.
Right. Moses probably getting out of juvie or something around that
time.
I think
Moses, like, with the way that film ends and everyone's chanting Moses' name and the fact that she's defending him, I feel like he gets...
The community would have banded around him
I almost feel like she would have adopted him, as weird as that is, even though they're kind of close in age. I mean, he's supposed to be 15 in the film and she's like in her 20s, so it's like a 10, 15, and she's maybe 30. So it's an age difference enough where she could adopt him. I think that would be kind of cool, and then see what happens afterwards if there's more of these aliens, which I love the reference to them being like spores because they actually look like spores.
They tend to, like, they're fuzzy and they have like the kind of bioluminescent
and
look
the way
about
that
them.
They move around, the way that they, you know, they're explained,
yeah,
that they kind of seem to move from place to place and they follow something, you know, and that's just kind of how it works.
Now, as atypical type of horror movies go, monster flicks and horror movies don't often go hand in hand.
Well, so it's sci-fi. I mean, it's very sci-fi horror.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, they don't always go hand in hand. Sometimes they go horribly wrong. It takes a deft hand to make it work. And I think Joe Cornish is able to do that pretty much effortlessly, it seems, with this film. It has just enough humor in it and just enough horror in it to give a good bridge between the two, you know.
Well, I would almost classify this as a bit of an adventure film because it's not so much location hopping, but it's more of a rite of passage, like boys become men.
So
sort
a coming
of
age type teenager film.
Teenager film because it all of these characters and immaculately written.
Yeah,
it's all about pretty much all of their. It's mainly about Moses's journey, but
oh well, yeah, absolutely.
It treats all of those characters with the type of levity where they would actually have grown up in a situation like this, and it treats that with a type of maturity where, like, everybody gets their due in this film.
I mean, it's kind of like a war film in a weird way, because like you have a couple of people who get picked off along the way as they're fighting against this unknown enemy, you know, this like enemy from beyond type situation.
Yes.
And I think that's really cool. And then we have someone like Hi-Hat who's in it.
Yeah.
Man, that dude.
It's all about these fascinating characters. And I see that in like a movie like Aliens. I see that in all of these great like type of like character driven, like bit character driven.
Actually, you have multiple action. You have multiple enemies, and when between like Aliens and like this, it's like you have your human enemies and then you have your creature enemies.
True. And it's all built on these larger than life type of character moments,
right?
And that's what kind of makes I wish that we could have seen that a bit more in maybe it's not exactly indicative of horror films in general, but whenever we have a lot of like big concept sort of things where like we're making these things on a budget, but it's on like multiple cast members and we have a bunch of these monsters that are expediting the plot in certain ways, we want to establish like certain beats for characters that that people can easily latch on to.
Right.
And for as much as this movie juggles, it does it all effortlessly.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any sort of real fat to trim.
No, he actually already did. Like, he had to cut 15 minutes or something, or 15 pages worth of content from it in order to hit the budget for what they wanted to do. So it was like a lot of extra stuff that, you know, it might have been cool to see what he had on there, but it works with what they were able to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it probably was maybe Nick Frost's character in it a bit more.
Probably.
Which I'm fine with him not really being in it. I'm fine with him kind of being a small cameo. It works. He didn't really... I mean, it is more about the kids and, like...
Yeah, it absolutely is. I felt like that was...
Jodie Whittaker's character, too. I mean, yes, like, her... And kind of, like, them starting on the worst footing...
ever.
And then having it where they're saving each other by the end of it. Like, that's really cool to see.
And it's a good arc for all of these kids to kind of go on. And a good kind of journey for her to go on as well, to kind of empathize with these kids' situations.
Now, it did throw me a bit when they started killing off some of the kids. That threw me just because I wasn't expecting it.
I kind of feel like... But that's the way that those kids kind of react to it is also very... kind of endemic of, you know, growing up in an environment like that where, you know, kids might get killed.
Yeah, no, in general. And that's also where it's like, yeah, it's messed up and it happens and that is part of life, especially with like what they're involved in with the drug running and stuff like that.
Exactly.
And getting involved in dealing and then dealing with Hi-Hat. And I mean, he is the other enemy. Like, he's out there trying to kill Moses and his crew. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he is the other external threat. Yeah. And these aliens may or may not have been, like, these could easily be taken as a metaphor for that life.
Right, and it could have been also, like...
That could be eating at them and chasing them, yeah, and knowing that it's bad.
Take the aliens out of it, and it could have ended with two of them still dead.
Exactly.
But just seeing how it went down in that hallway scene, especially with the smoke after the fireworks, I was like, this surprisingly works really well. Like, getting you off, like, you end up losing your sense of direction and everything because you're in a fog-filled room. You hear these things around you, and you're like, what direction is it coming from?
Fantastic soundtrack, by the way.
Great soundtrack,
a little John Carpenter-y, but a bit, like, techno-bumpy.
Yeah.
Like, it's synth.
It was a lot of fun. It was really... That's the type of music that I think fits for that type of film, too. Yeah.
Some punky synth. Anyway.
Right. There are people I know who have talked about Attack the Block sequels. I think, personally, it could go either way. If you are going to do something like that, you definitely have to bring back Joe Cornish. Like, you cannot hand this over to another
And he's
director.
Primarily a writer, first and foremost. He's written a lot more TVs. He's been, like, doctor to a lot of other types of projects. But it seems that he hasn't directed that much post this. He's directing one made-for-TV movie that's coming out later, and then another major feature after that. And it's not really that much else. So he seems to be the one that wants to take his time when it comes to getting in the director's chair.
Yeah.
And he'll write a bunch. He's done a lot for TV. I'd very much like to have him back at the helm if he were to do something like this, because it's certainly, like, this movie ends on a kind of a perfect note that you don't really need to encapsulate on any other way as far as Moses' story is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, it ends at a great thing. I don't think, like, following up with a 6 months later or anything like that is necessary.
No.
I almost feel like leaving it up to your imagination on what happens. But you can kind of assume that he's going to end up at least, like, the worst case scenario, he's in juvie for 6 months or whatever.
Sure.
Doubtful, though, I think, given the situation and what those things were doing, and they'll find enough evidence, and from, like, cameras and shit, he would be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man, this is a fun movie. It's, like, a great... harkens back to old-school creature features and, you know, those fun coming-of-age movies of the 80s that it, you know, it seems like a lot of people are trying to... there's, like, a rekindling of that genre
a bit lately. Like, I feel like it, and that's tough to find because we're kind of muddled down with the action blockbuster.
Yeah, but you have
genres,
like, you have
as well,
like,
that
It and Stranger Things.
Sure,
and
that, like, that's more of like a nostalgia kids adventuring on bikes type.
Right,
of,
but that's
yeah.
this is almost no different except a sci-fi creature feature version of some of those other films.
So
this takes on more of that something from another planet is coming in instead of it being like any of the other ones where Stranger Things it's like a different dimension or it's something that comes from another dimension.
Right,
and you know is. Fully, you know, invaded every 27 years. So it's cool, like, to see that these type of films still have... These are my favorite type of movies, for the most part.
Right, and when this movie came out, it snuck up on everybody, because it hit the festival scene, and then it blew up.
Yeah, yeah. And it had so much hype behind it, and it was definitely well worth all the hype that it had. I mean, I've seen this movie, like, plenty of times. Good
right,
God.
And it's tough to say that you kind of want more movies like this, because this movie is kind of wholly unique that you almost kind of don't want replicated in many ways. Like,
yeah.
the, like the sentiment of like, make great characters and make good recognizable beats for ensemble casts so that you can latch onto every single one.
Right.
Have more kids cowering in a trash bin the entire movie. Like, that was probably one of the best bits in this entire film, was just those two kids inside the trash can the entire film.
Well, the one who's in there and then the two kids who are, Probs and Mayhem, and then they jump in by the end of it, which is just hilarious.
Genius. It's genius.
And I love how they end up disposing of one of those.
Yeah. Just like, fighting back because they earned the last bit of, they did one thing, and then that's great.
They take that little damn cap gun.
Yeah, that's great. Real. No one's going to call you mate.
I still can't believe, like, the way the deaths were with the kids, too. Like, Franz Drama getting his head just basically ripped off with the helmet on it still.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was...
Kappa was detated.
Yeah, it was... Holy shit.
Yeah, it was... It's very, like... And that was the kind of, like...
When that moment happens, you know it's fucking real. It's not, like... At that moment, you know anything can happen in this film. And then when, you know, the next character ends up getting it...
Right, and that was the kind of moment for me where I'm like, oh, that's kind of a little bit of the Edgar Wright over the topness, but also like, oh, shit's about to go down.
I mean, like, it's like very like Shaun of the Dead.
It's a shoe drop moment.
Any character in Shaun of the Dead could get killed at any moment, and
and then you see one happen, and you're like, oh wow, this is like also real, but also kind of like absurdly violent.
I mean, it's absurd. It's violent. It's very cartoonish.
Yeah,
but at the same time, then you know that all of your characters are now put in danger.
Yes.
And it is possible that they can die. So you're not just kind of like, all right, well, there's no real peril for them. So why do I care?
True. Yeah. It's a very good balance. This movie strikes with so many different types of things, with its effects, with its drama, with its comedy, with its over the top action sequences, but still being grounded and earned.
Yeah. In a lot of respects. There's no stupid, like, I mean, we already talked a little bit about it, but really, like, there's no filler. It starts, it goes through, it ends.
Mm-hmm. Never outstays its welcome.
Extremely competent as far as, especially when it comes to that. And that's very important, where a lot of horror films, like, this is in the hour 20 mark or hour 30 mark. It's very short. And then you have a lot of these movies that run, you know, an hour and 45, an hour and 50 minutes, and you're like, man... If you just trim 10 to 15 minutes out of there, you would have a tighter film. And this one is like right on the nose.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's tough to heap more praise onto it because it's literally that kind of movie where you're just like, yeah, keep this up. Like, this is super, super good.
I mean, this is the type of the amalgamation of multiple genres that we want to see more of.
Yes. You know,
there needs to be more of this type of stuff coming out, getting attention, getting funding. I mean, this film partially got made because of, you know, the UK film
lottery
and stuff.
And it's I know that I kind of like ragged on Spielberg for stuff like that, but I also, like, to his credit, like, the reason that those movies like The Goonies and stuff works is that it does blend a mix of all of those genres, right, like this film does. Like, that that makes it into a sort of adventure, sci-fi, comedy,
and that's creature, well, that's feature one of sort things of that film. Always aggravates me when a studio says they don't understand how to do it, or they're like, we're not sure we can hit an audience with it. And I'm like, do you understand how many films already exist that do that? Like, use those as a blueprint, for God's sake. It's not that difficult.
And that's the type of thing where, like, between pitch to studio buying the film. Like,
yeah, somehow shit gets messed up.
Yeah, but and that's the thing. Like, in order for, like, Attack the Block would not make it in a pitch.
No. Well, yeah, I mean, it would make it on an indie studio, but, like, then you wouldn't have a $13 million budget. You would have a $5 million budget, and...
A lot of this would be kneecapped story-wise.
And it would end up being one that felt too long because it would all be dialogue, no real action, and just more of a... I mean, it could still be good, but I just don't think it would be as fun.
And in a way, I feel like, if anything, I wish, and I'm pretty sure that Attack the Block would have contributed to the type of trends that indie films have gone after, that big studios would want to continue to go after, because I remember when this movie came out and it was like on fire at box office.
Well, it didn't do super great here.
But like it blew up because of the indie scene, and then everybody was wanting to see
it. Oh, right. But then it became one of those things where it was more of a video.
Right.
It did it on video on demand and rentals and
which
sales,
it did very well.
Which it did great on that. But this was, 2011, 2012 era where it was still hard to get these films to take off. Mm-hmm. Like getting these now, shit, man, 2017, horror is where it's at. Films that are horror films, doesn't matter if they're good or not.
Did you happen in the 80s? Guess what? You just got greenlit.
Yeah, exactly. Like everyone is just running towards the horror genre right now because people are all about it. It was the catalyst for that, man. Like the fact that it did as well as it did and basically like saved, it wouldn't fully have saved summer 2017 because summer had already pretty much ended. It was just the beginning.
Sure, yeah.
September.
It was a shot in the arm for fall. I'll
but yeah,
that.
It totally was because it was necessary. I mean, with having the worst summer in 23, 25 years, something like that.
Right.
It's exactly what 2017 needed. And it was a fresh, good, great horror film.
Yeah.
And then Annabelle Creation kind of was like the predecessor to that because it kind of led into that where it was like, oh, a prequel that doesn't suck. And people were all about that because that made a decent amount at the box office as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's a franchise that they'll be growing
on.
Yeah,
and now I'm just seeing more and more of these films. Happy Death Day just came in at number one the previous week. Then the Madea, Butu.
Are we going to have
Halloween.
To see Happy Death Day?
No, we're
I
not.
I hope we're
no,
not. Okay.
Dude, no.
Thank you.
I don't do... like. I don't have anything against PG-13 horror. I think that it can be done very well.
For sure.
Well, no, I do have a few things against PG-13 horror. Sorry, I say I have nothing against it, but I do when it's not taken seriously or done well or there's not respect for the genre. A lot
of PG-13
times,
horror?
Well, PG-13 horror, for the most part, is a cash grab.
Well, yes.
So you can get a younger demographic in, you can tone down the gore, you can, like, you neuter out the gore and,
up the jump scares.
The violence, or the gore, the terror, well, you do kind of a little bit of terror in there, you do more jump scares,
yeah.
Bloodless kills, and then just no language at all, like, people in those situations wouldn't just be like, oh, darn it, man,
but it could
that sucks.
But it can still work, and to its credit, Attack the Block is rated R.
Yeah, of course. But I'm saying, like, PG-13 horror is what's kind of going wrong in America today. And films like Attack the Block are great. But they're not making as much money as they should be making or doing as well. I feel like if Attack the Block came out now, it would kill it.
Oh, for sure.
Like, if Attack
because
the Block...
this has every type of sentiment. This could,
and, it has,
like,
and it has John Boyega, which right now...
very, he's hot right
he's
now.
He's super... Yeah, I mean,
with Star Wars.
With Star Wars and everything. And then he's, now Pacific Rim 2 and all these other films... even films that weren't great, like, he's in a lot of stuff.
That being said, he'd probably never go for something like Attack the Block now. He's too big.
Oh, no, he would. I totally feel like he would. I mean, he's too old for the role now.
True.
But I feel like he would still be.
Yeah, still. Interesting enough, though, because, again, it's... the type of sentiment that this movie comes with, like, I almost forget that this movie is rated R until I see, like, that decapitation scene or something like that.
Yeah,
where
because it's not trying to be overly intense.
No,
it
it's not.
Just because it's, this is the genre that we're dealing with, and these are the things that happen in this genre. Usually, like, there's death, there is, people cuss, like...
But, and that's the thing, like, when we see a PG-13 horror movie or an R-rated horror movie, typically, in America, a movie like that, if it's about an R rating, it's all about that R rating.
Yeah.
In Attack the Block, like, there's maybe, like, 2 to 3 displays of, like, gratuitous violence, I would say, and nothing really else.
No, I mean, like, there's language and stuff like that.
Sure, but...
So for the most part with these films, it comes down to, sure, the violence is kind of an R-rated violence, but it's mainly language and things like that. And I think in a horror film especially, like...
that could easily be taken out.
I don't know.
For the sake of...
PG-13 horror to me seems to go too dramatic for the most part. They always want to try and upsell, like, the drama and the scares because they can't focus on the gore and they can't focus on, like... making, vulgar characters or crass characters or whatever.
Yeah.
They have to kind of put it somewhere else. And it's hard for a lot of directors to be able to do it.
Yes, very true.
That's really what it comes down to. But thank God for movies like Attack the Block.
Absolutely. So yeah, that is kind of going to do it for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
With this one. Again, another rock solid entry from from Joe Cornish and Attack the Block. So that is going to do it for us. Thank you guys so much for listening. I've been Steve Allman.
And I'm Rob Holmes.
Thanks again for listening.
Look time to keep your appointment with the Wicker Man.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk here.